Okay, my clock says 4 o'clock. So why don't we call this meeting to order? Could I have a roll call, Danielle?
Vice Chair Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Commissioner Salverson?
Here.
Chair Beasley?
Here.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for everyone participating tonight. We haven't seen each other for a little while, so I'd like to start out with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag first, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We're obviously operating via Zoom, and it would really be nice if we could find a way of stopping that. But it is what it is for our ability of having a meeting. Danielle, do we have anyone on the line for a call to audience?
No, sir. I don't see any hands raised or any messages.
Okay. Well, then I think what we'll do then is go forward past the call of audience and head for the staff liaison report.
Well, I guess that's me. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Really, the only item that I have for you this evening is to discuss our water debt refunding or refinancing that we've been going through, the process that we've been having. And it looks like that is finally coming to a conclusion. We're looking at closing tomorrow. And so we're slated to close tomorrow on that. Just wanted to provide some updates and details regarding the transaction. We decided, and this kind of played into some of the delay as well as the holidays, but we decided to bifurcate the transaction and split it into utilize two separate financial institutions for the transaction, because we were getting different bids from a number of different financial institutions. And because we had a taxable piece and a non-taxable piece, we were kind of trying to decide what was the most financially advantageous for the town. Where we landed, I think, is very positive. For the taxable side, we were able to achieve a rate of 1.16%, which we feel is outstanding. And for the tax exempt side, we received a rate of 1.27%. Our total net present value savings was in excess of $250,000 for the transaction as a whole. And our percentage savings of the refunded bonds exceeded it was about 4.71% net of all fees and charges included or incurred on the transaction. Just to give you a sense of the current rates that we are being charged for the debt that we're refunding and refinancing, our 2007 WIFA, we were paying 3.54%. Our 2009 WIFA, we were paying 3.17%. And our 2012 water bonds, water revenue bonds, we were paying between 3 and 4%. Between now and 2029. So again, we feel very, very good about where we landed. We would have hoped to, would have liked to have seen more savings, but as it, given all that we went through, we feel very good. And given the length of time of the obligations that we're refunding, we feel very good about where we ended up. So with that, wanted to again wish you all a happy new year, and it's good to see all your faces. Hope you enjoyed your break in December. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Beasley?
Yes.
I'm actually here today. I do have pneumonia, so I'm a little under the weather. But we do have the next agenda item is a discussion of possible action regarding the funding of the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System, PSPRS. Police pension liability through bonds, contingency reserves, or other mechanisms. And that's for tomorrow. That's okay. All I have.
Okay, so you jumped ahead of us here in terms of the council liaison comments. That's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that. No, I'm under the weather. My apologies.
No problem. It's good to have you. I hope you don't have coronavirus and it's just pneumonia, which is bad enough.
Well, I did have COVID, and my recent test came up negative, but it might have been a false negative, so I got to get retested.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I've had it for 2 weeks.
So. Well, you're going to make it, so that's the good news.
Yeah, thanks.
Welcome. Danielle, could you call item one for us, please?
Review and approval of the November 17, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
Has everyone had a chance to take a look at the minutes for our November 17th meeting? We did not have one in December.
I did take a review, and I do move approval, Chairman.
I'll second it.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor, aye?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Unanimous approval? Danielle, how about number two?
Presentation and discussion of Town Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2020.
Okay, I guess you're up, David.
Good evening, once again, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. This item, we are presenting our annual comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2020. That's attached as part of your agenda item this evening. We actually have Chris Heinfeld here. He's a partner with Heinfeld and Meech, our auditors, to do a short presentation. But before that, I just kind of wanted to make a couple brief comments here on this item. We felt that the staff felt that the audit went very well this year. We were able to actually, and this was kind of a goal that we weren't quite sure we were going to achieve, but we were able to draft the complete financial statements in-house this year, which is, I believe, a first for the town. We kind of slid right underneath the deadline in doing so. You'll note that the auditor's opinion reports are dated December 31, as is the letter of transmittal in the report, and that's when it was all finalized. So it was literally on the last day of December this past calendar year. So, but with that said, feel really, really well about the audit process, feel really good about the financial statements. I think that the town ended off last fiscal year in a very strong financial position. We just continued to build on our general fund. I know there was some concern and question about whether that was going to be the case, but we did. And so with that said, I'll kind of turn the reins over to Chris. I'm going to try to share my screen and run through the PowerPoint presentation that he's provided to us this evening, just to provide some talking points for you. So with that, hopefully I'll do this right here. He actually,
hey,
can you guys see that okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Good.
Great. So Chris Heinfeld, like I said, the partner at Heinfeld & Meech in charge of our engagement this year, the floor is yours, Chris.
And great. Well, I will try to keep this brief because I do know you guys have a full agenda, but at least touch on a few key important items. And I guess the first being what Dave mentioned is the town and himself took on the task of drafting and completing the comprehensive annual financial report this year. And so that was definitely item pleased with how their report came out this year. One other thing was, like Dave mentioned, we did get it submitted on time. So I think the awarding agencies, which require the December 31st deadline, and specifically GFOA, have provided automatic extensions, just knowing the circumstances. But it was nice to at least get this report done on time and timely with their normal deadlines. So just to walk you guys through the report in the different sections, financial statements, or in the town's case, the comprehensive annual financial report, is really divided into three main sections: your introductory section, your financial section, and your statistical section. Now, these main sections have obviously subsections that are listed here, and they really depend on what information is being reported. So just as a reminder from last year's presentation, that our audit report is contained in the financial section. It's the first item, and it sort of states what we're auditing, what our responsibilities are, what management's responsibilities are, and then any additional information necessary. So in that report, you'd find that the introductory section as well as the statistical section are unaudited sections of the report. The real main audited section of the report is that basic financial statement section, and that's the third section there, which includes your main financial statements with your major funds, whether it be your governmental type funds or your enterprise funds, cash flow statements if they're applicable. Now, we do provide what's referred to as an in relationship opinion on the combining and individual fund financial statements, and that's the fifth section under the financial section. And then lastly, the other two sections under that financial section are the management's discussion and analysis, as well as the required supplementary information sections. These are, again, sections that we actually do not provide an opinion on as well. And the sections that we're providing an opinion on or not providing an opinion on, that's all standard practice. I don't know any auditors, unless required by specific statutes, laws, or regulations, that provide opinions on these other sections. And to be honest, for some of them, there wouldn't just be any kind of auditing standard or guidance out there. Just to brief you guys on our audit approach this year, very similar to prior years, despite everything going on, we were on site two different weeks, the week of September 28th, as well as the week of November 2nd. And we did hold discussions with the mayor on that week of December or of November 2nd. And so typically an audit involves an immense amount of planning procedures, no different in this case. In fact, probably more additional planning procedures and working out some logistics, everything from just confirming our understanding of the town, their procedures, their internal controls, whether it be at a specific account balance section like cash or revenues, but all the way up to tone at the top, general control environment type items. And then obviously the field work procedures that we discussed, we were on site two weeks, as well as with 3 to 4 individuals each of those weeks. And then a slew of wrap up and concluding procedures, including representations from management and other items like that. But overall, just considering everything going on, I'd like to say the audit went as normal, if you can say that at this point. We got the report out in time. The audit went smooth. Working with Dave and his staff was excellent. We were able to get all the requests we needed. It was definitely a nice surprise in the environment we're in right now. And so at this point, I'll open it up to any questions or comments you have either on the report or our audit process.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions, if I could.
Fire away.
Mr. Heidenfeld, thank you very much for your report. And first, before I ask some questions, David, I just want to echo my congratulations to you and staff. Knowing what the environment is such as it is today, to have you come through and produce this on time is quite a testimony to you and your staff. So congratulations on that. I just wanted to get my 2 cents worth there, and hopefully it's worth it. Mr. Heinfeld, you mentioned as you were wrapping up that the environment certainly provides everybody a challenge nowadays, and that's to be understood. We're all challenged by various things, but because of the challenges that we're facing, particularly in the environment we're in, did you have to change your audit plan whatsoever for what you've been doing to what you had to do this year?
Yeah, I'd say the audit plan gets tweaked and adjusted every year in terms of specifics. One of the main things we focused on was really understanding internal controls as they were before any mandatory shutdowns or leave were required, during that period of leave, and then after any mandatory leave requirements were issued. So really understanding how internal controls were affected and changed during those three different time periods of shutdown, and then understanding whether the town had implemented additional controls, alternative controls, or whether the controls in place were sufficient during that time. And then we also then tested controls or transactions in each of those three buckets. So that was probably the main additional change we made during this year's audit.
Did it result in any recommendations on your part that we should be aware of, or did everything come out satisfactory to your review?
Everything actually came out satisfactory. The town was able to make some minor adjustments as needed, but really was in a very strong position where a lot of their documentation was already available electronically, and maybe some tweaks to remote access to be able to suffice, but a lot of the review and control procedures in terms of approving transactions were already electronic and in place in that method, so they could be taken out remotely or on site through the financial reporting system that the town uses.
Understood, thank you. Just on another item, did you have to make any material adjustment proposals to management, or is that all taken care of by the time you reviewed the book?
By the time we reviewed the comprehensive annual financial statements, we did not have to make any material adjustments. We did, as we review any comprehensive annual financial report or financial statements, make suggestions on tweaking items, how to move items around, or ensuring that formulas are working correctly as situated, but no material misstatements that needed to be corrected.
Okay, good. I noticed, or it was written up, that there was no management letter, and I think that's, at least from my experience, 2 years in a row that you haven't done that. Did you make any other recommendations for improvements, enhancements, or changes to the staff for their consideration?
Let me just quickly bring up some of the audit documentation we have on my side, just to make sure, but no formal recommendations, nothing that was in writing that staff needed to be corrected because it didn't align with policies, procedures, or posed a risk of any kind of internal control weakness. I'm just reviewing it right now, and no, I think we talked about a few items with revenue accruals and ensuring certain state revenue accruals are properly presented. The states changed sort of some of their shared tax revenue reports and how those get distributed and how they describe the different types of revenues, which has caused towns across the board. And I think this was part of last year's restatement note in the comprehensive annual financial report, that basically the states shifted almost all their revenues back 1 month. And so we discussed that and made sure that the town was in compliance with that and knew that going forward.
Okay. So that in your consideration, that's no longer an issue that has to be concerned with?
No. Okay. No, Commissioner Lathbert.
Do you have a chance to take a look at the information systems and their ability to process and report and record the financial transactions?
Yes, we do extensive work in terms of looking at the town's financial statement and their information systems and ensuring that transactions properly flow through the system, that the users of the system have the proper access rights. So a lot of the time we're getting user role listings, which will tell us what access rights each user has, and then ensuring that that specific individual has proper access rights. They don't have access rights they shouldn't have, but they have all the rights that they need to perform their job duty functions, whether it's what we call a read-only access, just to use some information, or whether it's actually an edit access. So we look at that not just on individual functional levels, but application levels, and throughout this is the different financial reporting systems. The town has their main UNIS system, but also has several other smaller systems that flow into it. And so we look at the smaller systems as well as how the systems all work together.
Gotcha. Well, that's good. In terms of the financial software systems, are they all up to date in their upgrades and they're just being in conformance with what the manufacturer generally recommends?
Yes. So one of the other areas we look at, Commissioner Lashford, is actually looking at those dates and whether it be even down to antivirus system. We'll look at the last time they updated their antivirus system and make sure that appears to be up to date as well. So we're looking at all the financial systems as well as other IT security systems they have to ensure they are all up to date.
Good. Yeah, and I think I'd like to kind of wrap up my questions. Some of the other commissioners have their chance, but one of the things that I'm quite interested in is, of course, you mentioned a couple of times the environment that we're in, that we have to operate in. And you have a good perspective from your position with what many towns and cities and governmental organizations are doing to make it through this particular environment. And I was wondering how our town stacked up and how it compared, and whether there's any recommendations that you can provide to management that they can utilize, and or at least take a look at, and who you can refer them to.
In terms of how the town of Oro Valley stacks up to other towns, I think you guys far exceed probably the average or what we've seen. We've seen other towns really struggle just on the working remote side or having access to work remote or having the financial systems in place and the electronic review and approval procedures in place to continue operations. So I think the town is far exceeding probably what we've seen of other organizations in that retrospect. And then Commissioner Lafford, you had a second question at the end of that. Sorry, I missed that.
No. Well, whether there's any recommendations that you've made that the commission or the council should be aware of that you intend. I didn't see any in your report.
No formal recommendations. And to be honest, as the recommendations came up, we found that the town was already in process of implementing some of those. So one of the items we look at is adjusting journal entries. And the journal entries we were looking at were very paper intensive, and we recommended that the town look into scanning those or performing those electronically and having all the supporting documentation that way. And then as soon as we were recommending that, we found that the town was already in the process of transitioning the very much paper process of journal entries into a more electronic aspect.
Well, thank you very much. That sounds very encouraging. It looks like we're way ahead of things compared to others in our field and everything. That's very good. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stop there for a minute and turn this back over. I hope some of the other commissioners have some questions. But I think we've had a very positive report here, and I want to commend the management for that.
Thank you, John. One quick question. How does the town of Oro Valley fit into your client base from a size perspective?
Thank you, Chairman Beasley. Just to be honest, it's not significant to our client base. We audit so many different municipalities and school districts in Arizona. It's probably in the range of 2 to 250, ranging in sizes as well. We audit all the way down to really small entities, all the way up to your city of Tucson is one of our clients. So quite a wide range in various school districts and other governmental entities as well as nonprofit organizations.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions?
Got a few I like to bring up. These are kind of minor, but I thought I'd at least ask them. One of the things that, David, you may have to answer some of these, but the general fund has a loan with the community fund, they're paying back for when, I guess, the golf course and stuff is purchased. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, that receivable that's in the general fund is kind of a long-term receivable, but yet there's no fund balance designation for it. I know it's probably not material, but I was just wondering if that should happen.
Do you want to take that, Chris, or do you want me to take a stab at it?
Sure. I'll jump in. Commissioner Mason, nice to talk to you again.
Hello there.
So I'm looking at the general fund. Was there a specific receivable account balance you were talking about, or just in general this transaction that happens each year between the community center fund and the general fund?
I think there's $120,000. I think it was a 10-year loan. So I think is the receivable on the books more of a long-term situation, so therefore it should have a fund balance designation as well?
No, so the receivable between the general fund and the community service fund and the community service fund would have an offsetting payable are not recorded in the CAFR and in the town's financial reporting system. And the reason there is from what we can tell is when the transaction occurred to quote unquote loan the community service fund some startup money, no formal repayment schedule was set up. And so along the guidance of GASB, when there's no formal repayment schedule in terms of principal and interest payments, and there's no true penalty for these year-to-year transfers not being made, then no formal receivable or payable is set up in the financial statements. But yes, me and Dave did talk this year about that agreement, made sure we were on the same page and in what year we were in terms of that transfer between the funds, because I think it is a set amount each year.
Okay, good. This is probably more for you, David, but in the fund balance note, I noticed that you didn't have anything assigned, which I think, don't you normally put your fund balance usage in the budget is? Is this just something you're changing for this year versus prior fiscal years?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, you're very perceptive. So we changed our financial policies. The council, we had a recommended change to the council that I brought before them in June of 2020. And they approved that change. And basically with that change, there was no requirement to assign that fund balance moving forward. So that was just one of the changes that that I recommended. I know my predecessor, the interim CFO, Kevin Arts, that was a change that he had actually proposed and made. And that's how that kind of came to be as far as I'm aware. But I didn't really, I thought it was kind of a little bit unnecessary. It caused a little bit of unnecessary paperwork, et cetera. And it didn't really accomplish much from the standpoint, the overall big picture of things, from my perspective. So that was one of the items that I changed.
Okay, very good. Also, I noticed in note 3 that, again, you had a particular fund that exceeded its budget. I think you had the same situation last year, and I know we talked about it. We really said it wasn't a violation or anything, but I wonder, does mayor and council have to get approval in there that this occurrence has been taken care of? Because since you budget by fund, that's kind of a budget, not legal is awful strong, but it's a budget entities, and the fact that you exceeded it, I was just wondering maybe in the footnote for future years that there should be a little bit more disclosure about mayor and council approval.
Yeah, and that's something that Mr. Heinfeld and myself have also had discussions about. We do recognize that this was a question last year as well. And Chris has actually done some research on it. I don't know. I mean, this is something that we've disclosed just kind of being out of full disclosure. We don't, you know, I think from my standpoint, from Chris's standpoint, I don't want to speak for Chris. Chris can speak for himself, but from the firm standpoint, so far as I'm aware, we don't view this to be a material transaction or a material expenditure in excess of budget. We certainly don't view this to be violating any legal provisions of the town, but we do disclose it just to be open about it. And it might be something that we don't disclose moving forward. We'll have further discussions about that. Chris, go ahead and jump in if you have, if you need to correct me, but I know Chris actually sent me some emails even this past weekend about this item, so.
Yes, Commissioner Mason, I remembered your question from last year and just making sure we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's here. I'd done some research and really the items that need to be disclosed when you exceed your budget are primarily related to your general fund or your special revenue funds that are major funds and reported in your RSI. The way that this note disclosure loops in is that you're required to disclose anything that may be considered a violation of legal or contractual provisions. And so it then becomes down to whether exceeding the budget, which as you mentioned, Commissioner Mason, is adopted at the fund level, whether that is a violation of some kind of legal provision that would then need to be reported. And so the idea is the alternative is you can report it as a violation of legal provision. And then the only other thing you need to provide is one or two sentences explaining the way that the town is going to rectify the situation in the coming year. So it doesn't, the guidance out there doesn't necessarily provide any other items besides that. You either decide it's not, and or it's not significant, or you decide it is and provide the additional disclosure. But me and Dave did discuss it this year, and I provided him some guidance and just something to watch out for and just decide maybe in a more formal aspect what the approach is going to be going forward.
Okay, thank you. And then in note 8, which is your pledged revenue, and you're talking about your excise bonds and your pledging excise tax, I noticed in the note, they still kind of use sales tax and excise tax interchangeably, which I don't think it necessarily is. But also in that note, you compared your, I guess, how much the percentage to gross revenue. Shouldn't that be more pledging what your pledged revenue is? Because you're not really pledging your gross revenue, you're pledging your excise tax revenue.
And Dave, I can jump in and just at least take it from an auditor perspective in terms of reviewing the note disclosure, and then you can jump in and provide some information. Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, one of the, I believe, and I just have to double check this, but one of the requirements is to actually compare it to gross revenues so that the readers have an idea of what you're pledging compares to total revenues. Now, as you mentioned, there is some information required in terms of how much you're pledging of that type of revenue compared to the total revenues. The requirements for disclosure aren't necessarily a percentage in that fashion, but more just to state maybe what total revenues were for excise or sales taxes or that specific category and how much of that source was pledged. And so I believe the note disclosure captures both of those sides. I'm looking at it again, and to talk to your comment about the sales and excise tax revenues, and maybe Dave can jump in, that may just be a terminology gap that that the financial statements are trying to bridge between the face of the financial statements report the revenues as sales. However, in the revenue bonds, the actual term or type of bond is considered what they call an excise tax revenue. So maybe, and I'm just speculating, just trying to bridge that gap between what's in the financial statements versus what's in the note disclosures for those two types of items.
I know you have a statistical table in the back that specifies and lists out what the excise tax is. And I guess nothing else, you could probably reference that table in the note just to provide, I guess, additional clarification but just a thought there.
I don't know, Chris, what your thoughts are about that. I mean, the statistical section in the back is not audited, but the notes are considered a part that the auditors opine upon. And so I think if we reference them in, I don't know if that would then expand the auditor's opinion, that they would then be forced to opine upon a part of the report that they would not normally opine upon. So,
I mean, just in response, Commissioner Mason and Dave, I think you could reference the statistical section if you wanted to. I don't think it's going to add too much heartache on your auditors. But I don't think it's also a bad idea to include some additional information in there. Like you mentioned, Commissioner Mason, that actually shows that percentage as well. You know, I'm always a big fan of the financial statements are confusing enough. Any way to simplify them or provide some kind of insight into a lot of the information in there or more useful information is definitely something that could help.
Very good. Again, congratulations. I know what it takes to get this CAFR out on time. And one thing I wanted to particularly thank you for is putting those hyperlinks in the table of contents. So that sure makes it a lot easier to run through that whole CAFR and get information. So good job, folks.
Well, yes, Commissioner Mason, thank you for that. Thank you for your kind comments and your specific questions. They are appreciated. I would like to take credit for the links. Unfortunately, I will pass that credit along to one of our administrative staff who actually put that table of contents together for me.
Good job. That really helps.
Thank you.
When you're looking online.
I've got just one quick question.
Eddie?
If I may. And I'll reiterate again also that great job. I flipping through this, nothing really popped out at me. I thought it looked really good. So, but just a quick question for Chris. In light of the current environment that we're in and the situation we're in, so this report has about 3 months of, you know, shutdown type life for us. Do you have any either recommendations or perhaps things we should be aware of or watching in particular as we go forward? Anything that guidance or anything, you know, anything we should be reporting on or paying attention to?
Thank you, Commissioner. Nothing specific, just that I've been advising cities to continue to monitor your budgets and specifically continue to monitor those funds and wait, and maybe where you don't have a large fund balance where you may not be getting all the revenue resources that you've been getting in past years, and to be cognizant of that now instead of in 6 months down the road when it's year end and you realize that all of a sudden you've overspent a fund balance, you haven't been reviewing it closely enough throughout the year, and now you've got to make adjustments to find out where you're going to find additional revenue sources for that fund, if you're allowed to transfer any funds in, or if those expenditures qualify for other funds. And then taking advantage of all the grants out there. There's a lot of grants to help municipalities and governments in these times for various reasons, and whether it be slowdown in the economy, lower sales taxes, state shared revenues coming through, just trying to take advantage of those opportunities out there.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner have a question? I'd like to thank the entire staff and obviously your auditor for getting this thing done nice and clean. And it looks as though you've got a good working relationship between the two of you, which helps a lot. Thank you very much. Any other comments?
I'd just like to thank you, Chairman Beasley and commissioners, for the opportunity to present this evening on the comprehensive annual financial report to the commission and answer any questions you have. And feel free to shoot me an email through Dave or through my contact information on the presentation if you have any further questions or comments.
Thank you very much for coming to make this presentation to us. Danielle, could we go to number three?
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2021 financial update through November 2020. Mr. Chair, commission members, let me share my screen here and bring up my PowerPoint. Everybody can see that, I'm assuming?
I'm seeing you, but I'm not seeing you.
Oh, really?
I smile.
Yeah, nice smile.
No, I just had to click share. There we go.
There you go.
Got the last piece of it. There we go.
There we are.
Okay, perfect. All right, so thank you for the opportunity to present our monthly financials too, as I typically do. This is our presentation through November. I'm happy to report at the outset that this is, again, a good news item. Things continue to look very positive in all of our funds. So we'll be covering the usual funds tonight in detail, the general fund, highway fund, and community center funds. Jumping into the general fund on the revenues, you can see our major categories there. So local sales tax, the budget's $18.1 million. Through November, we're at just over $9 million in the general fund, which equates to just under half 50% of the budget. We are currently estimating to come in at about $18.9 million. So about $800,000 over budgets. That's due to, again, just reiterating what we had presented for our last presentations. Nothing's really changed in terms of the categories that are driving that. It's our strong construction, online, remote collections are trending very well. Those two categories really are what's driving it, but retail looks positive as well, and utilities also. The state shared revenues, those actuals are just under $5.8 million through November, which is about 44% of budget. Those we are expecting to come in on budget at this point. So some of the trending we've seen with the state shared sales tax has improved a bit. And so we have all of those categories basically coming in on budget at this point. They're looking good. So we will continue to be watching those. The charges for services, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but we know this category has been struggling just a little bit with our parks and rec program revenues, fare box revenues. Those are really the two categories that are driving some of that low trend there. And so we have brought those down slightly under budget. And that's just, again, due to the impacts of COVID, and we'll keep watching that. Licenses and permits, rocking and rolling in that category. Our budget's 1.6. We are already at close to 89% of budget in that fund, or in that category. We had budgeted 225 single-family residential permits for the year, and we are at 185 through November. I can mention December's numbers as well, which was another 52 permits. So that category is doing very well, not only on the residential side, but commercial as well. Some large projects that we had kind of pulled back on budgeting because of COVID, not knowing what was going to happen in that area, but there's been some positive trends there too. And then finally, the all other category, obviously the big chunk of that is our CARES funding. But that also includes our intergovernmental revenues,
our RTA reimbursement for transit, transfers, and that sort of thing. Those actuals are just over $6 million through November, with a budget of about 8.2 or 74% of budget right now. We do have those coming in just slightly under budget, but again, the big chunk in the actuals through November is the CARES funding. In total, the general fund revenues, we are at about 53%, just a little over 53% of budget through November, so $23.1 million. In total, we are looking to end the budget about 2.7% above those revenues, or about $1.2 million. That's really, the two categories are sales tax and licenses and permits, just driving that overage for us. And we'll continue to watch those, but so far, everything is looking really positive. On the expenditure side of things, trending a little low, but I'll talk about some of those details. So in personnel, that always depends on how our payrolls fall. I believe through November, we were at about 10 payrolls out of 26. So, you know, just slightly under if you took a straight trend of the fiscal year. So those will be made up as we progress through the fiscal year. We are looking at seeing some savings in there because of vacancies that we've seen so far. The O&M side, spending trending a little slow in that category too, but we are watching that and expecting that to ramp up as things are getting more underway in terms of projects. We're at just under $3.7 million in actuals through November, and we are looking to come in at about $11.2 million, just a bit under budget. We are expecting to see some overall department savings as we normally do, as well as it's likely that we may not spend all of our CARES funding, the amount that we had freed up as a result of the CARES funding. There may be some areas there where we come in under budget, and we'll keep watching that. On our capital, for that category, the actuals are also pretty low year to date. We've got things such as some computers and servers planned in that category. We have some grant-funded vehicles for the police department that haven't been utilized yet, as well as some projects that we had budgeted as a result of the freed-up funds from the CARES funding. And so some of that's the reasons why that's looking a little low year to date, but those are starting to ramp up. We have started the PSPRS contributions, the $500,000 that we had budgeted. We started doing those as monthly contributions starting in November. So those will be ramping up. And then the transfers out, pretty standard there. We've done one out of three CIP transfers now, as well as all of our transfers to debt service. So that is the actuals of $1.4 million through November in that category. And then in total, general fund expenditures, we are at just under $15.7 million, or 35% of budget. We are expecting to see some savings there of just under $800,000, or about 1.7%. And that is due to, again, the categories of some personnel vacancy savings and O&M as well. Here's our chart through November. You can see the revenues of 23.1 compared to last fiscal year. The big chunk of that is the CARES funding that we received, $5.3 million. On the expenditure side, $15.7 million spent through November compared to $16.8 last year. That could be timing of payrolls as well as just overall spending being down as a result of us kind of trimming some of those plans for COVID. Year-to-date surplus, we are at $7.4 million. That may sound huge, but again, that's the CARES funding. That's the big chunk of that. We are looking to end the fiscal year with a surplus in the fund of about $710,000. That is compared to, I believe we had a budgeted deficit of about $1.2 million, so things very positive there. And then our estimated ending fund balance, looking at about $22.1 million. And I should note, if there is comparison with the CAFR, when we bring back the mid-year financials, we are going to need to do some final updating of the fund balances that are stated in these attachments. Through November, obviously, we did not have the CAFR get finalized, but those numbers will all be plugged in terms of the beginning fund balances and will be reflected on the mid-year financials. In the highway fund, things pretty vanilla there. The HERF revenues are looking great. They're at about $1.5 million through November, or 44% of budget. Those may end the year just slightly above budgeted levels, so we'll keep watching those. The grant revenues, we had mentioned these last month, and I think maybe even the month before. Those are due to some personnel reimbursements that we had budgeted for our LaToya roadway project. But because of the accelerating of that project, it's pretty much complete at this point. We are not expecting any additional reimbursements right now. On the expenditure side, they are at about $1.7 million, or 45% through November. We do have now the fall treatments that are reflected in the actuals for capital outlay in that fund. And so those actuals are finally starting to look a little more normal in comparison to the budget amount. We are expecting to end the year with a little bit of budget savings in the highway fund, just due to some personnel vacancies that we've been seeing. Here's our chart for the highway fund through November. You can see the revenues compared to last fiscal year, down about $300,000. I have mentioned in previous months that we did have that one-time HERF allocation last fiscal year, and that's really what's driving the difference there. The expenditures, $1.7 million for the current year compared to $1.2 million. That could be probably some timing on the capital spending on the pavement preservation and just in terms of when those invoices happen to be hitting. Our year-to-date deficit right now is just over $200,000 in the fund, but we do have a planned deficit in that fund. We're looking at year-end, a deficit of about $218,000, which would bring our ending fund balance to just under $600,000. In the community center fund, our contracted operating revenues are currently at about 38% of budget through November, or $1.3 million. To note, that is about $235,000 higher than revenues compared to the same period last fiscal year for contracted operating. The town operating revenues are severely below budget due to COVID, so we have been watching some of those. We did need to bring down those year-end estimates through November just based on what we're seeing, not only with the facility having been closed, but just still struggling to get that foot traffic back in there with the pandemic. So that category is trending low, and we'll continue to watch that and monitor it. And the half-cent sales tax revenues look fine in the fund. They're trending as expected. They're at about $1.1 million through November, or just under 44% of the budget. On the expenditure side, the contracted expenditures are at about 44% of budget, or about $2 million through November. Compared to last fiscal year, they are lower by about $140,000, or 6.6%. Some of the categories where they appear to be low, there is, just comparing to the fact that we had a different contractor last year, there is some categorical differences there, but personnel, one area where we're seeing some savings, the lease amounts, obviously, with some of those leases ending and that sort of thing. But those are lower through November compared to last year. And then the town operating expenditures, same thing, kind of tied to the revenues. We are hoping that some of that variance on the revenues, we are hoping we can cover with some expenditure savings. We're obviously seeing low trends for both the personnel and O&M. For that fund, so we will watch that and hopefully be able to make up a good chunk of that revenue shortfall with savings on the expenditure side of things. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund through November. The revenues pretty much flat to last fiscal year at $2.5 million. The expenditures are lower, 2.4 compared to 2.7. That's basically savings on both the contracted and operating expenditures with the town, facility closures, COVID. Our operating expenditures are less, as well as the contracted side of things that I mentioned just a minute ago. Our year-to-date surplus in the fund is just over $100,000. We are expecting to end the year with a slight deficit in the fund of about $45,000, and that would bring our estimated fund balance to about $860,000. And again, same with this fund, as I had mentioned, with finalizing those CAFR numbers, you will take those final figures for the CAFR, plug those in as beginning fund balances, so we can get a complete up-to-date picture in terms of estimated ending fund balance for the mid-year financials. And that ends my presentation, and I'll be happy to take any questions you might have.
Anyone have any questions for Wendy?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions, if I could.
Fire away.
Thank you very much. Wendy, can I go back to the general fund just for a second? In there, it was written in the communication to the council that one of the actions that we're doing is that we are deferring many large one-time costs. And I was wondering if you just educate us as to examples of what that is.
Vice Chair Latchford, that just references in general some of the trimming that we did to some of the department requests back last year when we were starting to look at the potential impacts of COVID. I know there are a number of capital needs in the town that had been submitted by departments, some of the smaller capital items, facility maintenance items, and that sort of thing that we did decide to hold off on. And so that's just speaking to, in general, some of the trimming that we had to do as a result of just stepping into the unknown with the pandemic and wanting to be conservative and hold off on addressing some of those needs. And I would expect that some of those needs will probably pop up again next year because of the fact that we've kind of held off on some items. We can take a look at that based on availability next year.
So to be clear, deferral is really what we're doing. We're not canceling, we're just deferring.
Right, I would agree with that, Vice Chair Latchford.
Okay, I got you. While staying with the general fund a little bit, we know that a couple of weeks ago, there was a federal bill that was passed for COVID relief, not stimulus, but relief. And I noted that the state of Arizona is due to receive some of that. Have we heard anything about whether there might be further funding for local government at all from the state? I know that the state has indicated that they've put into their budget for the remainder of the year a certain amount of money they expect to receive from that bill. But I didn't notice anything about their responsibility to shift some of that funding to the local government, and didn't know if you had heard anybody there and heard anything about that.
Vice Chair Latchford, I have not, unless the town manager or our CFO have heard, but I have not heard of any additional funding that will be available for local governments at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll jump in there, Vice Chair. In the last stimulus package that was passed, it's my understanding that there was not any direct allocation to cities and towns. However, as you're probably well aware, with the new incoming president, I believe he assumes office tomorrow, he has plans that he, with another stimulus package that's already in the works, and that package, as I understand it, would have additional direct allocation to cities and towns such as ours.
Okay, well, we'll certainly keep our fingers crossed. Can only hope that would make it easier. One last question. While we're kind of speaking about the environment that we're working in, which is our theme tonight, in the community fund, I noted that, and Wendy, you made mention of this, the fact that we're having reduced revenue through the community center on the town revenue because of expected and understood slowdown in traffic there. As we continue to look at the forecast for the end of the year, are we taking into account that may not rectify itself by the end of the year? End of the fiscal year, let me be clear.
Vice Chair Latchford, we have brought those year-end estimates down pretty significantly. The latest that I have heard on overall vaccine levels for COVID is that by June, anybody who was wanting a vaccine should be able to have received it at that point. And so right now I am hopeful that any impacts would be minimal, and that hopefully we can ramp that up next year and get back to where we had been in previous years and even higher, quite frankly, would be my hope. But right now, most of the impact is projected to end in fiscal year 2021 with some improvement next year.
Okay, so to be able to accommodate our current estimate, we would probably have to see that vaccine program work sufficiently to encourage people to come back to the community center, if I'm hearing you correctly.
I would agree with that, Mr. Latchford, yes.
Yeah. Well, okay, we'll see. All I can tell you is I'm too young to have to get the vaccine right away, but I'm in line early, so it's hopefully you're right. That's all Wendy, I have, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Wendy, with the question that John just had having to do with the COVID vaccine and traffic through the community center, has there been any thought given to restricting the community center to people who have vaccine documentation?
Trebizzi, I'm going to defer that question to our town manager if she would like to address that.
Mr. Chairman, we haven't addressed that issue yet. We're still kind of early in this process, but certainly I suppose that's a possibility. We'll keep our ear to the ground with Pima County to see if, people can use it now. They absolutely can use it now. We have shrunk the number of people that can use the facility. And it's just that what's going on is people are choosing not to sign up. They're choosing outdoor activities and that sort of thing. So it's partly going to be a demand issue, but we'll definitely keep that in the back of our minds and see if that might help. I wouldn't want to necessarily restrict it to people only who have had vaccines, but I think what we'll find is that as more people get their vaccines, they may feel more comfortable coming back is really what it'll boil down to. So I suspect we may start seeing some trends in the next 3 or 4 months that will help us as we prepare our budget and our estimates for next fiscal year.
Ms. Jacobs, the only reason I brought it up was my wife and I have received the vaccine, or the first shot, and we were given a card that documents that we received the shot. And there were comments made to us when they delivered that card to us that basically said, do not lose this thing, because they anticipate that travel or use of facilities, et cetera, may require that documentation for use, flying on a plane, getting on a boat, whatever it might be. So.
You're stepping into some legal issues, so I'll... I'll keep working with the town manager on some of those.
Putting a bug in the bonnet. Does anybody have any other questions for Wendy?
Just one question. How much of the CARES money do we have left?
Chair Beasley, Commissioner Mason, probably a good chunk. I would have to look into that and calculate some of those actuals, but the spending has been a little bit slow in some of those categories. I think just hesitancy in terms of spending overall, but I was just taking a look at some of those actuals a little before the meeting started and starting to see some encumbrances and purchase orders in there and some of those categories for some of those projects. Some of them were capital projects, some of them were operations and maintenance. And obviously the PSPRS contribution being 500,000 of that, we didn't start those monthly contributions until November. So we'll start seeing that ramp up, but if I had to look at just the actual through November, it would be trending below budget.
And if I may, don't forget, let's clarify, it's not CARES Act dollars. The CARES Act dollars were applied to the police department, and we're spending that down every month. So we will use every single penny of the CARES Act dollars that is allocated to the town.
Yes, that has actually all been spent.
Yes. Yes.
The funds that were freed up as a result that we are.
Correct. Yeah. And remember, we also set, I want to say, we set a good chunk of it aside in contingency. So that's not going to be used.
We did, yes.
But what's freed up and what Ms. Gomez is referring to, of course, is the freed up general fund money, which doesn't have a timeline on it, and which we are being very conservative in terms of how we were spending to make sure that we saw those numbers come in. So our business assistance program, we set aside $1 million, and I want to say we're at maybe 300.
Yes.
350, something like that. We'll continue to spend for the rest of the fiscal year, obviously, but we may not spend all of that, but that those resources may, you know, may be dedicated to additional assistance next fiscal year. You know, those are the types of things that we'll be taking a look at during the budget process.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I don't have a question. I know we have a large agenda, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I note for the record that I'm very pleased with the performance of the contracted golf operations through this part of the year. And I do plan next month, once we get to a way point, I think it might be a good idea to ask questions as to how sustainable that continued performance is moving forward. But for now, I just like it stated, you know, just for the record, that it was a great month, and they should be commended for putting in a great result for the town.
Thank you, David. Wendy, a quick question and then a comment to you. On this state shared revenues, I seem to remember something about it being lagged in terms of the cash that goes to the town. So are we still looking at basically a lot of 2019 money that's coming in that might be different as we look at the next fiscal year?
Chair Beasley, yes. For the state shared income tax, there is a 2-year lag from collections to distributions to municipalities.
Do we have any sense at all as to whether there's going to be any material impact to that going forward?
We do, Chair Beasley, so there will be a delayed impact from COVID on that revenue source. In fact, I think we're looking at about an 8% decline next year, if I recall correctly.
Okay. And one quick comment for you. I'd like to thank you for showing our charts there with actual versus actual. That helps me out a lot to get a sense as to where we are, where we were.
Okay. Well, good.
And I'm pleased that everything is holding up spectacularly.
I am as well. Thank you, Chair Beasley.
Any other questions or comments?
Just one comment. I just wonder if we could, on your general fund sales tax collection sheet, could you add the shared revenues onto that when you get a chance?
Oh, that's right, Commissioner Mason. You had mentioned that. I apologize. Yeah, we will look at getting those on there. Thank you for reminding me.
Thank you.
Danielle, can we go to number 4?
Discussion of items to include in a request for proposal or factors to consider in conducting a competitive solicitation for the town's audit firm.
I think this is yours, David.
It is. Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I kind of wanted to open this up for you this evening just to have a good discussion. We are, as you're probably all well aware, due to go out and solicit bids for our auditing services again. We actually were due last year, but we decided to kind of punt because of the timing and so forth of the transition between the interim CFO and myself. And so we kind of extended our contract with Heinfeld Meach through this current year, just to kind of get us through the audit, because it was my first run through it. Heinfeld Meach obviously had a lot of experience in performing our audit, just didn't feel like a transition was going to be productive or worthwhile for anyone. But with that said, we are due. And so we've been with Heinfeld Meach for a number of years. I've included a couple best practices, one from GFOA and one from AICPA, in terms of making a selection of an audit firm. And I think what you find in reading those, hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at those documents that have been attached, but what you find is they both basically say that it's best to do a competitive bid. We certainly don't have to. We could choose another path with that, but and look at existing contracts with other, cooperative contracts and agreements with other cities, counties, governments, and tag on to those. But with that said, I think it's well worth our while to go out to market again, to take a look at what our auditing services cost. And really, I just, again, kind of wanted to have the discussion with you, get your input on what factors we ought to be considering. I think quality, experience, qualifications, obviously the fee, questions such as should the location of the audit firm matter? I know some policies of different towns and governments, the location of the contractor is a factor in the decision, because those cities, towns, counties, they want to keep the money local versus sending it up to Phoenix with a Phoenix firm, etc. So just I guess kind of trying to get your opinion, your sense as to what we ought to be looking at, so that we can, when we draft the RFP document, when we take it out on the street, that it reflects your desires, your wishes as to, and even the process that we utilize in selecting our new auditor. So with that said, kind of open it up and love to entertain any comments or questions that you may have at this time.
Commissioners?
Are you gonna, will you put up, Dave, kind of an RFP that we can look at, or are you gonna give us something to start with, or how do you wanna work that?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, I do have a draft. Unfortunately, I received it a little bit late to attach to this agenda item, but it's pretty standard, and I think I've actually got a couple drafts. One was utilized by the city of Tucson, and I think one was utilized actually here for Oro Valley, but they need to be updated. It's like anything, we don't want to use a one-size-fits-all approach. We want to kind of tailor this thing to be responsive to what our needs are as a community and as a town. And so, I think, I can definitely provide something at the next meeting with that. I mean, that's without question, if we want to just table this, if you want to actually see something, but I would like to still hear your comments and get your input, receive your feedback as to, do we want to weight certain criteria? Do we want some criteria to be higher weighted than others, or just kind of equally weighted? How important is experience and qualifications? How important is the fee? How important is audit quality? How do you measure that? That type of thing. What types of minimum standards should we be looking at in terms of either the auditors on our engagement and or the firm that we're selecting? Those types of issues.
Yeah, from an experience perspective, obviously, I think we want someone who has extensive experience with municipal accounting and not just commercial. Does the town have a preference? Is it somebody from the Phoenix area or the Tucson area, or do you have any preference in that area?
Commissioner Mason, members of the committee, I really don't. I know just from my experience, I come from an auditor's background. So this is really, this issue is near and dear to my heart. I love dealing with our auditors, quite honestly. It kind of takes me back to my former days. And so I to me, audit approach is really important. I know the firm that I used to work for, we took a very strong balance sheet approach. Trying to tie down assets, liabilities, make sure that the balance sheet was really tight. And then from there, we kind of undertook procedures on the income statement side to make sure that those revenues and expenditure or expense categories were fairly stated as well. Because we have a wide variety of firms here in Arizona, just like any state does, you get different approaches and different ways that those firms handle their business and take to the process. So I have a high regard for our incumbent auditors, Heinfeld Meach, and I mentioned that earlier. I think they've done an excellent job for the town. I think Chris Heinfeld, I think one of the things that I look at, especially when I draft the CAFR, I really need someone that takes a very critical view of what I'm doing and really questions everything. And I've got to be honest, the amount of questions that I went through, of course, it was my first time through it with the town drafting this report, but the level of questions and the criticality of those questions through this process has been the best that I've had in my entire career. I thought Chris did a phenomenal job. I need that. I've dealt with other auditing firms here in the state. They have not been as tight in that regard. And I feel like that is, I don't want them to trust me. I want them to question everything that I do, because that helps me get better and progress, and it helps me catch things. And I feel like the ending product is just that much better overall for the town, for the community. So, and I've had auditors that have kind of taken more of a, well, you're a CPA, well, you have all this experience, and so we're just not going to do as thorough of a review. And unfortunately, the ending product it reflects that. So those are kind of some of my comments. But with that said, I mean, there are a lot of good firms out there. And so Chris is actually fairly new as a partner on this engagement. I think this was maybe his second year, and we'll see what happens with Heinfeld Meach. I mean, they're a well-known firm in the municipal market. They do a lot of, he told you tonight, they do a lot of engagements, but there are other firms. We use Henry and Horn at Northwest Fire, transition to them. They're a very good, reputable firm. They're not, as specific to governments, although they have a huge government base, client base. They also do, they're a little more diversified in terms of for-profits and partnerships and that type of thing. So there's a lot of good firms out there. So I guess that, it's really, again, kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were in terms of what you think is important in selecting our next firm, because I want those comments reflected in terms of the process and the RFP document.
How long has the town used them at this point?
As Mr. Chair, members of the commission, as long as I can remember.
I look back. I look back in the CAFRs back to 2010, and it's been Heinfeld since at least 2010.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, there's a thought out there that if you rotate auditors frequently, that you get kind of that fresh perspective. And I would agree with that thought process. There's also a thought process out there that if you rotate too frequently, that your audit is inefficient and it actually costs you more money. And I would agree with that as well. So, two trains of thought, and I think that's why we want to go out, is just kind of, do we need a fresh perspective or not? I think, with Heinfeld, Chris has been on the job 2 years, so I think he actually does kind of bring that fresh perspective. We haven't had the same partner on our engagement the entire 10 years or longer that we've had Heinfeld. But they are based in Oro Valley. So that's that's another consideration and another factor that I don't know if that's important to the commission or not. If you select a Phoenix firm or even a Tucson firm, they're traveling to Oro Valley, especially Phoenix firms, they're traveling, they're probably incurring some costs with hotels, meals, and that type of thing. So just more thoughts and information to consider.
Are you looking for like a 5-year type of contract?
Yes.
1 year and four optional and that sort of thing?
Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, we would do a 5-year contract. No renewals. We'd go back out in 5 years.
Do you really want to make a change this year with everything else going on in terms of COVID, pressure on staff, blah, 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 blah?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, what we found at my former employer is that when we opened it up, we actually got some bids that were phenomenal, in my opinion. They cost less. And we don't know if that's going to be the case, certainly, until we put it out on the street. But the opportunity does exist there with us drafting the CAFR in-house now. Now that I've got a year under my belt, I'm not really concerned. Almost a year here at the town will be well over a year, but by the time we undertake the audit season again, I'm not really concerned about switching audit firms if that's what's in the best interest of the town. So.
David, John here. The AICPA document that you sent is very thorough and extensive. I've used that in an NGO situation before, something similar to that, again, for the AICPA, and it's a pretty conclusive document. I would feel comfortable with many of the elements in there. In terms of the, first of all, what is the audit expense that we incur annually?
Vice Chair Latchford, I don't have that. Unfortunately, I don't have that information right offhand. I believe it's in excess of $20,000, but I would have to double check that.
Okay, because sometimes that the amount of your fee that you're willing to pay will determine who you might get interested in terms of coming on, especially at this time. I can't say for sure, but obviously I don't know whether 20,000 is a material amount or not for this marketplace. If you try to bring in people who are specifically experienced in or governmental municipal accounting, and how much that fee will make a difference might have an indication of who you'll find interested. If you decide to keep it geographically located, that might reduce the number of options that you have as well. I don't know. I'm looking at the list that was provided with the AICPA, there's not a significant number of firms in Tucson area that popped up to me. And I, of course, I don't know any of them, not having practiced here. So I guess in some regards, trying to make it more restrictive might be a little bit going against what you're trying to accomplish. I think anything else that you might want to include in there as factors, you might want, really would come out of what you've learned here this first year. You've got a good perspective coming in from the outside. Is there anything that the current firm lacks that you would be seeking, that you would want to make sure that a new firm coming in could give to you that you're not getting currently? And I'm not getting a sense that there is. Well, that's just one of the things I ticked off here, and you said any additional factors. Is there anything that you're going to pick up as additional benefit from changing to another firm that you're not getting now?
Yeah, Vice Chair Lasper, members of the commission, I just want to make something really clear, because you talked about whether we were going to restrict it to local firms or whatever. We would not restrict the RFP to local firms. What we could do is potentially give extra weighting to local firms, so preference to a firm that is local. We would not restrict it to if a firm had an office in Flagstaff or Phoenix or some other part of the state, we would not restrict the response to only accommodating local firms in the Tucson area. But we could give preference. That's just something that might be considered. I think from my standpoint, let me speak to some of the local firms. There are some really good local firms that do good work, and Beach Fleischman is one that's based out of Tucson that has local government and municipal clients. Clifton Larson Allen is another one that they're a national firm actually, but they have a Tucson location and office. So there are some local firms that can compete. Obviously, Heinfeld Meach is a big one. I mean, that's a the local government, the government sector client base is something that they've really chosen to focus their focus their practice on. And then Henry and Horn is another one, and I've mentioned them. But there are several others up in the Phoenix area that are really focused on local governments. And I get to interact with them every year when I go to the ASCPA Governmental Accounting Conference, because they're all there trying to get their CPE in. So there are a lot of good firms out there. I think from my standpoint, we are not we're not a tiny little community of only a few thousand or less. We've got a significant resident population. We're kind of a mid-sized, what I would consider a mid-sized town or city in this state, and I would want I would want our new audit firm, if we select a new firm, I would want them to be able to have the not just the technical expertise but also the staff and partners available to be able to understand what our needs are as a community, to understand what our needs are for an audit. And also fulfill those needs in an efficient manner that meets our guidelines and our timeframes. So those are kind of the important things from my perspective that I think we ought to consider. But that's just my opinion.
David, do they do anything for us besides the audit? Is there any other reason why, or things we should consider with our relationship with this kind of?
That's a good question, Commissioner Salverson. This year we were due for them to study our impact fees and to prepare produce a report for us, which is a legal requirement out of ARS for the town. Every couple of years, our impact fees need to be analyzed to make sure that they are in line and that we're not falling and doing anything inappropriate with those monies, that they're calculated appropriately, et cetera. So that's a law that was passed because some of the developers in that community had lobbyists and thought that that there was not maybe a level playing field with impact fees. So they actually did that work for us this year. We expect that report in another couple months because they have, I think, 9 months to produce that. But they the work's all been done. They just now need to punch out the report.
Okay. And you said you have a good working relationship with them. You're satisfied with their output?
Yeah, I am. I was getting a little concerned on the 31st, on the afternoon of the 31st, wondering if we were ever going to get our opinions. because we were kind of running up against the deadline, but Chris, again, he did a very thorough review of our CAFR, and I appreciate that. I thought he did a fantastic job. Part of the issue with us bumping up against that 31st deadline was was that we kind of got started a little bit later for a number of different reasons, COVID included, but also, you know, myself being new and, you know, we kind of got started in the process of, you know, even getting the contracts, that additional year contract with Heinfeld Meach, getting that signed, we were kind of a little bit late on, later than I would have hoped. You know, but those things happen when you're kind of running year to year and you don't have a 5-year contract. So next year, those issues should be resolved. The drafting of the CAFR will be much more efficient because a lot of that setup is on the front end, truthfully, in terms of tables and things, footnote disclosures. There is a lot to it in putting that document together. Thankfully, Heinfeld was more than accommodating and even providing the prior year's report to us. But even still, there's some things that, if you look at even in the statistical side, this sounds really, and it is, really insignificant, inconsequential, but typically you see a certain format in the statistical section when you have 10 years worth of data, where the most recent year is presented first and then the out years are presented after that. If you look at the 2019 report, it was completely flip-flopped in the reverse, where the ninth year, whatever, was presented first, and then the most current year was presented last in the schedule. That's typically not how those schedules are presented in CAFRs. So little things like that, they just take time to reformat and put all the documents together. And I did a lot of linking and things this year that should really facilitate a more efficient process next year. But that's just the CAFR. I mean, that's kind of the end product. But the audit itself, I thought they were very efficient. They were very organized. They provided us what they call PVC lists, prepared by clients, with things that we needed to do to prepare and load up onto their portal and could feed them information so that when they came out and did field work, they knew exactly what they were doing, where their risk areas lied, and that type of thing, and then could prepare an efficient audit process based upon that. And again, I think given some of the time constraints and that we kind of got started late, I am very appreciative of the job they did this year.
Is there value in them knowing and understanding the way the city operates, or is that a negative and just then they do, it's kind of business as usual, and like you said, you don't get the influx of new ideas, right? Yeah, sort of balance between those two.
Yeah, Commissioner Salverson, I think that's a difficult question. I think there is value in having auditors that understand the town, that have been with the town through some stuff. That they, and Heinfeld Meach, they certainly qualify. They understand, some of the issues we've had with golf, and obviously they're well versed in the PSPRS issue. In fact, I think they actually audit PSPRS, so they have a lot of familiarity with the significant issues, the major issues that the town has faced and will face moving forward. But with that said, any highly qualified firm, they're going to pick that up after the first year. The first year is going to be a little bit rough, but they will pick that up. And the second year, years two through five, that's where they're going to make their money. They're not going to make their money in the first year, because that's where, it's just like me drafting the CAFR. It was a heavy lift this year, but next year it'll be a lot easier. And it's the same thing with the audit.
Okay.
Dave, do you have your scope in mind? I mean, all the various reports you want them to do, any other services that you want the auditors to perform, either on an annual basis or whatever the basis is for the report, do you have all that down?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, I do, and I'm not going to change the scope significantly from what Heinfeld has done. I think the one thing, and they would have been required to do it this last year had we qualified for it, but we're going to need a single audit this next year. That's going to be really the big change next year versus this past year because of the CARES Act funding and the amount of federal awards that we'll be expending. So, but by and large, I don't see any significant changes to scope. for.
I think your expenditure limitation will get more complex, so you might want to bring that out. That'll be a, it won't be on home rule for the whole time frame, so.
Right. So
that will require a little bit more effort on their part.
Sure.
But otherwise, yeah.
Does it make any sense to, go ahead, John.
Two things that I would like to have considered for the evaluation is from each firm would be to have a list of the personnel who's going to be assigned to the account from partner all the way through to field manager or whatever levels they may be with their background so that you know you're not going to be training people. And secondly, if possible, I'd like to see the amount of hours that they're bidding. So that it's easier to see how they're getting to their dollar figure. So they should break it down by whatever you're requesting and how many hours they expect to be spending on that from staff, partner. And ideally, they would outline that to field staff, manager, on up to partner. So I mean, I think that that's very helpful when you're trying to understand where the dollars are.
Thank you, Vice Chair Latchford. I will incorporate that into our RFP.
Tobin, you look like you wanted to do something.
No, just remember that we've got to follow the procurement statute. So we'll make sure they all follow your suggestions, follow the procurement statutes. Thank you.
David, does it make any sense to go in with any other public entity for a joint contract, or is this thing simply not big enough to even consider?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, you know, I think if we were going to do that, I mean, it, really the way we would do that and accomplish that, number one, we can't, I don't think it makes sense to, you know, to bid out in combination, well, you know, two for one or, you know, type of thing. Well, we're going to split costs with maybe Town of Marana or some other local government in the area. And I think if we were going to look at that as an option, that's where we would really look at a cooperative contract, which those do exist with City of Tucson, with other local governments in this area. We could tag on to that contract and kind of use the contract that they established when they went out to bid and utilize that as our pricing model.
Does the mayor and council have any thoughts in this regard? Are they pushing for a new auditor, or they're just do the RFP and see what comes out?
Commissioner Mason, I don't really know. I haven't had that discussion with the mayor and council. I suspect, you know, basically what we're paying for is, you know, it's a little more involved than this, but it's basically an opinion. And as long as, you know, the auditor is a CPA, et cetera, they're independent from the town and follow all the rules, you know, I think, you know, we're, if it comes from one firm or one auditor versus another, I don't really know that it makes that big of a difference. With that said, you know, I think, and I don't want to speak for mayor and council because I'm not qualified to, but they have a lot on their plate right now, and auditor selection probably doesn't rise to that level. you know, and I don't know that it necessarily ever will. This, as long as the work gets done, as long as we are remaining in compliance with all the rules and regulations and state laws and all of that, I think that's kind of the big thing.
Well, I know, because I kind of ran into that with the City of Tucson one time, where the council, we had been with the same monitor for a while, and they just felt from an independence, and maybe we just need to do a different one sometimes. So that's why I asked the question.
Commissioner Mason, I have not heard anything from mayor and council, but truthfully, it's not a subject that I've broached with them either yet.
What are the economics of doing an RFP with staff time versus going back to your existing auditor who you seem to be happy with and negotiating a contract?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'll be honest, the economics of the staff time involved in generating an RFP, typically there's a pre-proposal conference, obviously we would need to put a team together, an internal team, to review the RFP responses, to score those, grade those, make a selection. It's a pretty significant endeavor, which is why we punted on it last year. It's because we had enough things going on with COVID and whatever that just didn't seem to make sense to me. I couldn't rationalize or justify it. I think the thing to weigh is what if we were offered a better contract, which has happened over the next 5 years. I know, where I came from, we were offered by one firm a fixed amount contract that they were already the lowest bidder, but they had no inclinators over the 5 year period. So there was no inflation built in, no cost adjustments. It was just, this is it. This is what we're charging you for 5 years. And it saved us a decent amount of money. So we don't know what that's going to look like until we run through the process. So it's kind of that cost benefit thing. I don't have a good answer for it just because I don't know what the market's like out there right now.
Well, that gets,
sometimes it's better to keep a client than try to find a new one.
That kind of gets into your procurement rules too, about if you go out with one versus do another contract with your current.
Yeah, what are those rules? I mean, what restrictions do you have in terms of negotiating a contract versus having to go through an RFP process?
Mr. Chairman, I'll jump in here for a second. We do have the ability to use a cooperative contract. We just have a philosophy. I know I have a philosophy that, and I can tell you that in my years of experience, when you go out, it gives you a real opportunity to refresh things, have the if there is a current vendor, really take a look at what they're doing, sharpen their pencil. And frankly, it is our obligation, in my view, as a government, to provide opportunities for competitive bidding. That's what we try to do. And so we strategically choose when is the right time for that. Right now seems to be a good time. There's kind of a nice break, and the staff time, again, as Mr. Gephardt mentioned, we're able to take the previous scope and just update it, that sort of thing. I do want to mention that because of the town's procurement laws or procurement rules and the state procurement code, that's one of the reasons why the town council's not involved in the procurement process. That's why we're involving you in the front end, because the commission's role is not going to be on the review and selection team. That's why we need your input in the content of it, so that we can then follow our procurement code, put the team together, and do the process to meet all those requirements. And so, but having that input is important, and I do think that we can certainly push this to your next meeting, give you something a little bit more, in depth in terms of the specific scope for your suggestions. But ultimately, the final document has to be written by our chief procurement officer, and we have to follow that process. So I just to manage expectations about, the proposals aren't going to come to you for review. That's the staff job to do that. But as Dave and I were talking, it is very important and part of the scope of what the town council included in the enabling resolution was to get the input of the commission for the audit to the extent allowable under the procurement rules.
I'm kind of inclined to go along with Mike's idea. Let's see what you've got for an RFP. You know what you want. You know what is available out there. You know what ever shortcomings there might be that you need assistance on or want second opinions or second guessing. So why don't you deliver something to us that we can take a peek at? And by the way, what exactly is your timing on this thing?
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, members of the commission, that timing would be established in the RFP document. And I've got a rough sense of it in my mind. Typically it's about a 2 to 3 month process at a minimum. I think we've got a pretty good head start in a draft that we're starting to put together. But it, you know, it isn't by no means finished. Obviously, we've got, I guess the bottom line is, long story short, we've got time to do this. We are not under any sort of time constraint, which we would have been had we tried to do this when I first was hired. You know, we had enough things with the golf, new golf operator and selecting that. And but there just was no way that was going to be feasible from a staffing or resource standpoint internally. But I think we've got that, you know, some of those things are behind us, some of those challenges, or less, so we're still working through some of them. But I think we do have time. We'll work through it. I can provide a draft to you at your next meeting. We can that provide any final inputs or changes that you may have at that point in time, and we'll still have plenty of time to get something selected by end of April, early May, hopefully. And even if it dragged into June, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Just as long as we kind of had a sense of it and got it loaded into next year's budget, I think that's really what the goal would be.
Are you looking to have the new auditor start with a new fiscal year?
Yes.
Well, just I would recommend, from going through this in the past, is that, you know, maybe you allow yourself a little more time, because going to a new auditor, it might be nice in April and May to be able to, or March even, to be able to be working out the specifics of the audit and stuff like that. So maybe as a fail-safe here, maybe, you know, still have Heinfeld do the July, the next fiscal year, and then follow on with the next. Just, you don't want to get yourself too tied up going to a brand new auditor in July when you haven't had a chance really to sit down and go over things. It might put you in a bind in December.
I appreciate that, Commissioner Mason. I think, you know, and I share that, those concerns, but I think we'll be okay. We're going to get there. Yeah.
What do you need from us right now?
Nothing that hasn't already been said. It sounds like we have good direction here, that I'll bring a draft back to you at your next meeting. We'll review that draft, and then we'll hopefully make those edits or changes that are necessary shortly thereafter, get it pushed out on the street, hopefully by first part of March, and maybe give maybe a month or so for firms to respond, and then put our team together, evaluate those responses, and take it from there.
So, David, the one thing I'd like to throw in here as a concept to think about is the clarity and the conciseness of the writing that's used in the auditor's report, so that the citizenry of Oro Valley can understand it and have some confidence in what's there. We don't want it too thin that it's just rubber stamp, but there should be an ability for the executive summary, the overview of what the opinions were found, and feel confident and understand that it was a true audit, but also that they were able to understand what was being communicated, that it's not in such accounting terms that the general person, you know, looking at it wouldn't be able to understand it.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Newell, for those comments. We do, you know, just so you're all aware, we do have a popular annual financial report document that we prepare as well. That should be complete by the end of this month. And that really, hopefully, the intent and design there is to take some of this audit information and demystify it, if that's a word, try to make it a little more clear for the general public to understand the financial condition of the town. And that's something that we've done for several years now, and that we'll continue to do. But I, you know, with anything that we can do to try to make the comprehensive annual financial report a little bit easier to understand, a little bit easier to digest, especially for even those that are not well versed in government finances, that is something that's always a goal that we're striving for.
Anything else on this subject? We've been going at this now for nearly 2 hours. Should we take a 5-minute break? Okay. And we'll be back here at about 5 to 6. That makes sense?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Why don't we reconvene our meeting, and Danielle, can we go to number 5?
Review the town manager tasking to the Budget and Finance Commission to review the town of Oro Valley Public Safety Personnel Retirement System, PSPRS, pension funding policy, and make a recommendation to town council.
Okay. Is this yours, David, or Mary?
Mr. Chairman, I'll take it. As you know, this is very closely tied to your next item on the agenda. So really, this is my responsibility under the enabling resolution, which is to task the Budget and Finance Commission with those items that that I feel would be beneficial and useful in developing recommendations for the council. So this is very similar to the tasking that was given to you last year for review of the annual pension policy that is required by state law, but it's slightly updated with a new schedule and also an opportunity to receive and provide input mutually with the consultant that the town has retained that David will be going over with you on your next agenda item to really do the deep dive, the independent deep dive into all of the different options for addressing the pension liability that the town currently has. And so as a result, with the engagement, also looking ahead, one thing that you'll notice as we're bringing this, it feels like you just did this, that's because you did. We're bringing this to you sooner rather than later in the process. Our goal from here on out is going to be to get your input before we start putting together and I develop the budget recommendation for the policy. And so that means that we'll start seeing this tasking closer to the January timeframe annually. But based on that, we would like to get to the town council by the very end of March or their first meeting in April. The recommendation, the options that that the consultant will be preparing, and the recommendation from the Budget and Finance Commission so that they can provide us with their direction and decision so it can be incorporated into my recommended budget, which we intend to present to council on mid-April is when we present that to the town council. So so that's really kind of it in a nutshell. And we have identified one additional special meeting for the Budget and Finance Commission that we'd like to get your concurrence on, and that is one for March the 9th. This will be the first opportunity for you to speak with the consultant. You'll have information in advance. You'll get a chance to talk to them about their options. And then if necessary, It will give you one more additional meeting on March the 16th, your regular meeting, to go ahead and continue. And we've made that a requirement in our engagement with the firm that we've retained. So so that's our schedule at this point. The firm is working on it, and we'll work with the staff next month, and then we'll bring their report to you in early March. You all will have an opportunity to review that and then bring it to council in early April. And so that is the summary of the tasking. Any questions?
So essentially, we're scheduling an additional meeting on March 9 for our discussion with the consultant and review what they have come up with.
Yes.
Then on the 16th, we would be expected to have completed a funding policy. Is that correct? To the town council.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Is the consultant supposed to come up with a recommended funding from the viewpoint of the city of how to fund the amount every year?
They're going to come up with what the options are and develop a model. The where it comes from is not there necessarily, although they may weigh in on some of that in terms of but their job is, hey, if you did this, this is what would happen. If you did this, this is what would happen. And then really those, as you know, budget decisions are annual, councils change, but at least there would be a framework and a real understanding about what would happen if, you know, if this was the policy, this would be the result.
Do you intend us to have an opportunity to give ideas to the consultant, them to bounce off and at least miss out of hand, or so that by the time we get to the 9th, they've at least had an opportunity to have some of what we've either talked about before or new ideas that we might want to at least have investigated moving forward?
We've given a pretty strict list. I mean, if you have ideas, Commissioner Newell, by all means, I want you to forward them to Dave Gephardt, but we've given them their scope has, I can't remember, they said that they were going to develop 4 options. Is that right, Dave? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, one of them, you know, just to give you a sense, I mean, one of the options is to utilize reserves. One of the options is to utilize debt. One of the options is to utilize a combination of the two and then determine what that combination is. There'll be a number of different scenarios and options that they will run through. They are experts in financial forecasting, and they'll do present value calculations to generate to estimate what those potential savings would be and what would be the most financially advantageous to the town. So that's what they're being tasked to do.
And are they prepared to look at different opinions on return on investment, benchmarks, all that stuff?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think we're kind of migrating into the next, but I think I can answer that into the next agenda item. But yes, that is correct. They will prepare different models, and those models will have various assumptions associated with them. They'll document all those assumptions, return on investment, you know, discount rates, everything that would be pertinent to developing a comprehensive financial forecast. And then, you know, depending on where, even, you know, what's happening in the debt markets, where interest rates are, et cetera, you know, they'll look at those different options and present those.
Kathy, I'm sorry, I jumped on you.
No, I was kind of asking the same type of question. I wanted to know, are they going to be providing different sets of assumptions, you know, most likely worst case market scenario, best case market scenario, that kind of thing?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And is there, have they been, is the goal sticking within our targets? Is that their end goal is to, here are the ways to get hit, you know, 70% by 2024, et cetera?
Yeah, so the commission is aware, they have been provided the current policy, which includes those targets. So they will, that's going to be part of the discussion, part of the analysis that they come up with is how do we hit those? Given what we've seen, given what our history has been, given where we think things are going moving forward, how do we hit those targets so that we're successful?
I think we are moving into the next item, so if we can finish this item off.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Okay. What do you need from us right now? We've been charged.
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing. I just wanted an opportunity to review it with you. As long as there's clarity in what's being asked, I think you can conclude the discussion on this and move right into the what.
Okay. Are there any more questions for David or Mary on this topic?
Well, we're definitely going to have a meeting on March 9th.
Yeah. Okay. Then, Danielle, can we move forward?
Presentation and discussion regarding the Town of Ore Valley Public Safety Personnel Retirement System, PSPRS, pension funding policy, and Town of Ore Valley PSPRS actuarial reports as of June 30, 2020.
Sure, David.
All right, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So this is where we get to update and find out where we're at. As you're all well aware, we did receive our new actuarial report or updated actuarial report from the plan from PSPRS as of June 30th, 2020. That came mid to late December. I was able to pull it off their website. Couple details in there. I've got a short presentation that we can run through if you'd like. You know, my memorandum to you all kind of hits the highlights of that, you know, our total assets, really what, you know, the dispatch, I don't want to discount the dispatch, but they are really kind of a smaller plan. So really a lot of the focus has been on our police PSPRS plan. The assets of that, you know, as of June 30th, 2020 were totaled $41.5 million. Our accrued liability increased to about $67.2 million, which raised our unfunded actuarial accrued liability to almost $26 million, $25.7 million. Our funded ratio did increase. I believe it was at 60.8, and it increased to 61.7%. So we did make a little bit of headway there, but not as much as we would have liked or hoped, certainly. You know, I think if you look at some of the attachments, I did attach both the PSPRS and the dispatch actuarial reports for you to review. And of course, I did email those to you earlier this month as well. So you had them prior, well in advance of this meeting. You know, and then I included our current PSPRS pension funding policy. I think that was something that was just as a review for you. But, you know, I think what we've seen is that even though we made an additional $500,000 contribution, the town did last fiscal year, and that did have an impact. It didn't have quite the impact that we would have hoped. We saw our the plan's interest earnings rate really kind of decline pretty significantly due to COVID. I believe in the police plan, it was 1.2% last fiscal. And so that took that weighted, if you look at this, you know, they do a weighted average on the investment earnings. over 7 years to try to manage spikes in pension contributions moving forward. That took our weighted average rate of return on our plan from 6.7% down to 5.4%. And of course, the goal, the target is 7.3. So we're over that 7 year weighted average period, we're well underneath by almost 2 percentage points underneath what the target is for the plan to earn, which of course, you know, if you just kind of look at this big picture, there's only two revenue sources for this plan to fund itself and sustain itself. One being investment earnings, which we know are not performing up to what the target needs to be based upon the plan and the benefits that need to be paid out. And the other is, of course, contributions. And because our employee contributions are fixed for tier one and tier two employees at 7.65%, that means that balance really falls upon the shoulders of the town, to the employer, to pay, and ultimately the taxpayer. So that's where we're at. And of course, you know, we already had a little bit of discussion in the last agenda item, but I think we certainly can have more about the town's plan in hiring a consultant, what the consultant will be doing, why we hired them. I think, you know, as we look at this, it can be simplified. I mean, really kind of, you know, the big principles are pretty much, I think, easy for most people to understand, but there's a lot of devil in the details types of things that are happening behind the scenes that the town really doesn't have a lot of control over, quite frankly. And some of those things are some of the major assumptions that the plan makes. And then of course that minimum level of benefits, which the town is contractually, or the plan, however you want to look at it, is contractually obligated to pay out to our public safety folks. So when they retire, so I guess again I can run through a short presentation if that's what you'd like, or if you want to just have discussion, we can do that. Either way, I'm at the commission's disposal.
Commissioners, have you had a chance to take a look at the document, the brief proposal, or the brief discussion of the plan? And or have you had a chance to dig through that actuarial report, which can be tough?
Mr. Chairman, just one point that I'm wanted to bring up and maybe see if there's any additional information on this. Obviously, the market return on the investments from the plan, as David just spoke to us about, was pretty poor at 1.7%. Time was not kind to the plan, obviously, because they included 6 months of market collapse that occurred from the pandemic. But since then, we've had a significant rebound in the economy and the markets particularly. And I'm just wondering, I'll be honest with you, this afternoon I went to the plan's website, but I didn't get too far. Have we any information on how they're performing since June 30th?
Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, I really don't, unfortunately. We don't get that information on a month by, I wish we did, but unfortunately we just don't. I don't know that information's available on a month by month basis. Just so you're all aware, you know, I have been in contact with the administrator for the plan, Mike Townsend. They are looking at updating. They put out a model. I don't know if you recall this or not, but they had a kind of a model, that an Excel-based model that they had established last year to assist local governments with trying to forecast their liabilities moving forward and how best to deal with those. And they were hoping to get that model updated and pushed out at the end of last week. And I unfortunately, I haven't seen that. I went out even on their website today looking for it. It's not out there. Even the old model that had the old assumptions was not available. So it's something that we're looking at. You know, obviously there's a lot of moving pieces with this thing, but you know, I think from the town's perspective, staff's perspective, certainly, and hopefully council's perspective, we kind of want to take, you know, we've got some time, but we want to take a very reasoned and pragmatic approach to this thing and not waste the time that we have. And again, that the $500,000 that we included loaded into last year's budget, that we included in this current year's budget, certainly that was helpful. But I think as we've seen, more needs to be done. That $500,000 just is not adequate to reach the targets and the goals that we're hoping to achieve by 2036. So did I answer your question, Vice Chair Latchford?
Yeah, I think you did. I mean, it's clear they haven't given you any information. I guess as you look to forecast what might be, looking at the different options that might be available to us, I want to just be careful that we're not forecasting off of a once-in-a-lifetime event, which maybe isn't going to be once-in-a-lifetime anymore, I don't know, but that we should if any information we can have as to how they've rebounded since June 30th, I think it would have an impact on looking forward.
Yeah, Vice Chair Lashford, I totally agree with that. I just haven't seen that information available publicly yet. You know, as I look even at my own personal investments and whatever, I was looking back over this last calendar year, I think I did the best in November and December. Interestingly enough, so you know, there were some other months that you know that the markets were, you know, rebounded. They rebounded in June, certainly in July, but they were pretty static, and actually I think even dipped a little bit. Just looking at equities, dipped a little bit in September and October, if I recall. So before coming back in November and December. So yeah, I you know, these things. I think it's important to, you know, to always keep in mind that. You know, that really we can single out individual years and whatever. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be productive. I think, you know, we really do need to take kind of that longer term approach of that 7-year smoothing period and keep our eye on that. I know it's easy to look at last year's return and say and be disappointed. I know I certainly was, but hopefully that kind of gets balanced out this fiscal year. And I think that's kind of the point that you're hitting at, Vice Chair Latchford, but even beyond that, like, we need to kind of keep our eye on that 7-year smoothing, because that's really going to impact things moving forward. And I think, you know, even beyond the 7-year smoothing, going back further, going back to the Great Recession, because we know that those things can happen because they've happened in the past. And if they've happened in the past, we know that they can happen in the future. And so what is going to be, you know, kind of stretching this out? I think that's something that our consultants hopefully will take a look at as we stretch this out from a longer term view and perspective. What should that assumed earnings rate be? Because I think we pretty much hopefully agree that 7.3% is too high. So what should it be? Should it be 6%? Should it be 5.3%? And then loading that into the model that we utilize for making our decisions moving forward and spreading out that burden of cost over the next 15, 16 years so that this thing is fully funded by the time it needs to be.
You know, one of the things that I was looking at in the member statistics, it looks like, I don't know, are you having about 25 or 30 police retire this year, or is that just estimated, or do we know for sure what that is, or?
Unfortunately, Chairman Mason, I don't know the answer to that. I can find out. I don't have that answer.
You know, it appears, you know, because I guess part of their long-term solution is you have to tier 3 people coming in, which obviously
you know, contribution rates are going way down. So will the consultants kind of look at what point does the mix between tier one and two and tier three, at what point do they become a situation where that impacts reliability going down just in itself? So, because right now, looking at the statistics, there's not very many people right now in tier three within the city of Oro Valley or town of Oro Valley. So I guess if, as retirements go up and people leave, I'm assuming you'll be, those people coming in, or at least maybe most of them, will go into the tier three side of the equation, which will eventually help, you know, but it looks like it might take a while for that to happen. So I mean, is that a piece of the information that they can throw into their projection to kind of see at what point does the tier three and tier one and two, at what point in time do we start making some gains in that area?
Yeah, you know, Commissioner Mason, I have received documents from PSPRS specific to our plan that actually forecast out what the liability is for tier one and tier two moving forward. And it's obviously significant on an annual basis what those expected payouts are as people retire. That's significant. And it's way out in the future, you know, and so, you know, as people, you know, this is where us living longer is an issue that's not really on our side. It's not to our benefit in regards to this financial issue. It's certainly a benefit to our police folks and our retirees, but because we all hope that they have a long, happy retirement. But with that said, that costs the town a lot of money, and it extends way out towards the tail end of this century, to be honest with you, before that liability completely is expected to go away. So these are long term you know, issues that will certainly outlive all of us, but we hope to deal with them so that they're not issues for the next generation to have to tackle.
And I was all, I mean, we set a goal for 100% funding, which obviously would be, you know, a goal to have. But from the perspective of, you know, bond raters and all the other agencies that look at, you know, maybe 100% isn't necessary. Maybe if you get it in the 80 to 90%, you know, certainly that has an impact on the amount of money we need to throw at it. But is that something that they can look at to see that, you know, from a financial perspective, you know maybe 90% gets us where we need to be without, you know, too much of a risk from the perspective of our finances? Because what it comes down to me is, you know, coming up with a revenue source, and what revenue source do we decide to use to help bring this down? But, you know, is it really necessary to hit 100% funding? Because I'm not sure that's even attainable when they start changing assumptions on us every year or whatever, that even if you're real close, you could fall back again, depending on what changes. So.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, your point's well taken. I think the goal ought to be 100%. The policy says 100%. I think that ought to be the goal. Whether it's attainable or not, I think that's going to be up to us to decide in how we tackle it, like right now, moving forward over the next 15, 16 years. To your point, it used to be, and I haven't seen this or heard this recently, but it used to be that public pensions were considered healthy if they were 80% funded. So, you know, that's when I was, you know, again, going back to my auditing days, this was two decades ago, but that used to kind of, I used to hear about that as kind of being the standard and as to whether it was a healthy plan or not. If it was less than 80% funded, it was not a healthy plan. If it was more, then it was overly healthy. It was a strong plan. So, you know, but with that said, I think there's, I think there are ways to deal with this problem. I think there are ways to get to 100%. I've already, Candidly, I've already worked through a couple models on my own, just because I kind of wanted to get a sense of what this might look like. And then we'll, you know, obviously we'll bring the consultants in and get them up to speed. I've already had a meeting with them just this morning, already uploaded a ton of background documents to them that they've requested for doing their analysis, and we'll try to make this thing as comprehensive and as strategic as possible to make sure that we deal with this once and for all moving forward. I think, you know, in terms of even past 2036, even if we're 100% funded, could we fall back? Absolutely. But, you know, anything's, you know, possible depending on the environment and what happens to investment earnings. But that'll be up to, you know, hopefully future CFOs and future town managers to try to tackle that at some point.
What is the average? Is it an average retirement age, or is it an age they can retire at, or is it a combo of years of service, you know, that's an individual decision?
Yeah, Commissioner Salverson, it's both. Depending on your age when you enter the plan, it depends on when you enter the plan, what tier you're in, whether you're tier one, tier two, or tier three. But typically, like tier one, tier two, you needed at least 20 years of service to retire. Tier three, I think, increased that to, I want to say, 25. Mm-hmm. And these are all in the notes to the CAFR. Yep. But then if you started in the plan a little bit later on, started that public safety career a little bit later on, I think you needed at least 10 years of service. It may be five, but I think it was 10 years of service to be eligible to retire in the plan with whatever your formula was. It's formulated, right, driven depending on years of service and age and all of that.
So are they also going to look at, for example, I'm looking at the chart right now that's counts and pay summary by service, and are they going to look at, well, maybe if, you know, this group that is, you know, 40 to 44 right now, if they retire in 10 years versus if they retire in 20 years, and is there any, you know, juggling with that as well as, you know, the interest rate issues?
Yeah, I think, Commissioner Salverson, I'm not sure that they're going to dig down into that level, because I think then you're kind of basically, you know, basically redoing the work of the actuary, essentially. Wow. I don't know that they're going to get into our demographic data. I mean, they could, but I don't know that that's going to be the best utilization of their time and efforts. I think what they're more going to be looking at is what's happened historically to get us to where we're at currently, and then where do we expect things to go in the future from a market standpoint, and right, then what do we have to do to make up that difference, to make up that shortfall,
right,
so that we can close this gap.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, how accurate are these assumptions with regard to the total obligation in the future? I mean, I don't know.
And then Commissioner Salverson, I mean, that's a valid point, because again, we could have, you know, it's kind of one of those situations where bad news is good news from a financial standpoint. So we never like to think that way, because it makes us sound morbid and awful and evil. But if we had, you know, a bunch of tier one and tier two folks that retired that weren't able to enjoy the full extent of their retirement per what was expected, then that would have an impact on our liability. And that's where these assumptions can be really impactful. But with that said, we don't know, and we kind of have to plan. These actuary tables that they're utilizing, they're generated based upon information that they're getting in real time, and they get updated on an annual basis. And so when they go back and do their recalculations, they're utilizing the most recent information available to them. And they have they do have, the actuaries do have our demographic information, and they are utilizing that in coming up with these forecasts. So
that's as good as you can do, right?
It is the best that we can do. That's correct.
Okay. Well, I think it's great that you're taking this seriously and really looking at a plan and looking at options. And I'm kind of excited to see what the consultants kind of come up with.
I need to make a couple of comments and bring your attention to a few issues. It's one thing to talk about percentage funding, and then it's another thing to talk about the actual number of dollars that are involved. Because the actual number of dollars of unfunded liability has steadily grown, regardless of what that percentage is. That's issue one. Issue two is, when you take a look at the smoothing, 5.4% on earnings on the portfolio, if you took a 60-40 stock bond index ratio over roughly that same length of time, that portfolio should have earned about 9.96%. These are statistics that come out of great sources. So the fact of the matter is the portfolio is underperforming dramatically, which basically says to me, you're not going to earn your way out of the funding problem. You've got to throw cash at it. And I honestly think if the town is serious about throwing cash at it, as you pointed out, Dave, that $500,000 really didn't do anything. I think you need to be thinking in terms of $5 to $10 million to make any type of a serious dent in the problem. The other issue is that when you take a look at these actuarial reports, they are showing assets, as an example, not market assets. These are smoothed assets. So the reality is that if you took away that 5.4% and took a look at the real market value of those assets, you can throw a few million dollars more of reduced assets that are available to you in terms of doing this analysis on the unfunded liabilities. At the same time, when you take a look at the 7.3% estimated return, bring that down to what is a more realistic return based on current portfolio and looking at what is likely to be in a market, considering the fact that we have gone through one of the best bull investment markets we have ever seen for the last 10 years, which is probably not likely to be replicated. In any case, you change that assumed rate of return, and you also balloon the liabilities. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there's a lot of trade-offs that may have to be done in terms of cash flow and funding associated with this whole plan. And it becomes a serious problem because I think, and I don't know if you've had conversations with your auditors about this or your investment advisors, but clearly what's beginning to happen out there is that rating agencies are looking at debt being not just those liabilities that are on your balance sheet, bonds that you have issued, but they're looking at the unfunded pension liabilities at the same time. So I think we're gonna see a situation in the pretty near future that these unfunded pension liabilities are going to take on similar characteristic to the other liabilities that you've got actually booked on your balance sheet. So I think it's a serious issue, and I look forward to what this consultant is going to be doing.
I'll just jump in there, Chair Beasley. Very astute comments. One thing I want to make clear, though, is that the pension liability is currently on our balance sheet. It's not something that's only disclosed in the notes. That used to be the case, but it's been on the front page of our balance sheet for several years now. I don't remember when the new standard took effect. I want to say it was 2016. Maybe GASB 68 was the standard that brought those pension liabilities onto the balance sheet and kind of to provide that full picture on the statement of net position as to what those issues were, or what they could be moving forward for local governments and investors to see that. So. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, from the town standpoint, just to tag along on that, the town is, you know, in relation to other towns, we are very underleveraged. We have very low debt. And, you know, and so as we look at debt as a potential or a possibility, and as the consultants take a look at that as to whether that makes sense or not, and, you know, I think, from my standpoint, you're basically swapping liabilities. You know, just from an accountant's point of view, just a dumb accountant like me, I'm taking one liability, which is a pension liability, and converting it into a certificate of a participation liability or a bond liability, another type of debt instrument. So from that standpoint, you know, I think we need to keep that in mind as well, that that really that it's the present value of savings achieved and the way to achieve that the most present value of savings over that, you know, 15-16 year time horizon. That's what we're going to be looking at, and if it takes some reserves to deal with the issue, then I think that has to be on the table, because again, I agree with the chairman. We're not going to earn our way out of this conundrum. I think that would be foolhardy to make that assumption.
Are new taxes on the table?
I don't know that they're on the table. I don't know that they need to be on the table at this point. Again, some of the scenarios and things that I've run, I don't think we need to raise taxes. We, you know, if we look at our general fund, our increase in fund balance last year, I believe it was, and I'm going to be wrong about this, but I believe it was $1.3 million. If we applied that to the unfunded liability and just, you know, in addition to the $500,000, because that included the $500,000 payment that we had, the additional payment we had already made, we had contributed an additional $1.8 million to the thing. I mean, if we did that over several years, that would really make a dent in this thing. But sure. If you listen to the financial presentation this afternoon from Wendy, you know, our forecast is that we're going to, you know, maybe increase the general fund balance by another $700,000. Well, that's not quite as much as what we did last fiscal year, but it's still something. And if we add the 700,000 to the $500,000, then we're at 1.3. So I think there are ways to deal with this, obviously, but we need to be really strategic and thoughtful about it.
David, I completely agree. Our next target goal, I believe, is to get to 70% fund by 2024, correct? And if I look at the Oro Valley's PRS valuation report and the impact of additional contributions, the cash value today that we would need to contribute to get our funding up to 70% is somewhere between $5 and $6 million today. So I think we need to start thinking about if that first is attainable and then is what we want to do, how over the next 3 years are we going to find somewhere between $5 and $6 million to get to that first benchmark, that first milestone.
Yeah, Commissioner Newell, I guess I would say it's going to be more than $5 or $6 million, because that's assuming where we're at today. And, you know, I think the plan, the indications are one of the major You know, I think it kind of goes unnoticed, but one of the major assumptions they have is 3.5% payroll growth. And the plan is, you know, from trainings that I've gone and et cetera, they are saying that they're going to dial that assumption back down to zero, actually. Take 0.5% per year off of that. And every time that they do that, that's just going to increase the overall liability. So I think it's actually going to take more than $5 or $6 million. That liability is going to continue to grow as they continue to refine and become more conservative with their assumptions.
David, I know that the police pension has its own trust in terms of town funding. So while we commingle asset management, it's the town's money, so it doesn't get lost with other towns. But is the consultant also going to factor in the other pension fund that the employees have and what the impact is of funding on that, even though that is in fact like a multi-employer type plan?
Yeah, Chair Beasley, they're not. They're just going to look really specifically at PSPRS and try to address that issue.
Because we do have funding requirements for that one, too. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may jump in on the Arizona State Retirement System, it's a different animal altogether, and we have basically no control over the funding over our portion of the liability that it is. It's just the portion of the whole. If we gave them extra money, it would just go into the entire pot and it wouldn't go toward us at all. Yeah. So the way that issue gets corrected is that the actuarial reports end up resulting in increases, and ASRS has been much more, let's say, willing to do increases, and then they increase both 50% on the employer side and 50% on the employee side. So that's where they're making up the difference, as they get more information, is they're just raising rates. That's the funding mechanism for it.
No, my only concern was taking a look at what our funding requirement is with that plan and add it to what's necessary to the other plan in terms of looking at total resources that the city would have to come up with.
Our forecast does include what we see as kind of a historical increase of state retirement for the other plan. So I feel like we're looking ahead at it, and it's pretty modest. We're talking about anywhere from maybe 0.25% to 0.75% now over the past 5 years that it's been going up. There was a time when they were going up a lot more than that, but I think it's been fairly consistent at this point. But we do build those into our projections with our the burden that we include for employee salaries in our 5-year projection.
Are there any other questions or comments by the commissioners? What do you need from us now, other than we've got a new calendar date here we've got to come up with evaluation of what the consultant does and ultimately make some recommendations, I guess.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't necessarily need anything from you at this point. This was all about really kind of trying to set the stage moving forward, you know, for us to update the policy, because that's one of the key items that we're asking you and tasking you to do. And then the other thing is just to provide input and feedback as to reviewing the options, and if you're comfortable with making a recommendation at some point, that would be probably a joint recommendation with either staff and or the consultants, nothing for this evening. That would certainly be down the road in the future after you've seen more information and had more presentations and really kind of done the deep dive into what options are available to the town for dealing with the issue.
I guess what I would like to do is encourage all of the commission members then to send any comments or suggestions on to you, David, as far as things that the consultant should consider. We can be at all helpful in that direction.
Certainly, we would appreciate any comments or feedback that you have that would that could help steer and facilitate a more efficient process.
Okay. Thank you very much for that report. I know we've already heard the council member Nicholson's report. Do you have anything else that you'd like to mention to us, Councilman?
No, I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay.
Thank you.
Future agenda items. Any suggestions? I have one, anyways. A couple of years ago, we had someone come in from the pension plan, and we had sort of a joint study session that took a look at the plan, its funding, and what was going on. That might be helpful again in terms of how, you know, the charge that we have of taking a look at this plan. But I would also suggest at the same time, because I felt that presentation was quite weak, having to do with the actual funds management side of the equation. I guess I would like to see the commission become a little bit more informed as to how those assets are being run. And I'd like to kind of get a better feel for asset allocation and other issues related to why we have this, what I feel is pretty significant underperformance of the plan versus market conditions. Is that possible, Dave?
Jim, I agree with you. I think that's critical information. You would think a plan would give its members that information. My latest run through of looking at their publicly available data, I didn't put it in the framework that you did, but their most recent news release lauded how well they stabilized the fund this past year, ending June of 2020. So obviously they have a number of PR people working for them. And so I think it could take some effort to get that level of detail out of them. I don't see it publicly available. I couldn't see it. I'm not in the business, so I don't know where to look necessarily. But I was looking specifically to find out. They must have, of course, they have to know where they're performing at this time and what their outlook is. And since they're a public entity, you would think that that's readily available, but I couldn't locate it. So we might want to get a hold of a representative from there and tell them what we're looking for and let them find it and provide it to us.
Yeah, Vice Chair, Mr. Chairman, I will do my best to try to line something up or at least gather that level of information that you're looking for. You know, PSPRS is a public, you know, a subsidiary or a what's the word I'm looking for? A subsidiary basically of the state of Arizona. So they, I think they're subject to public records requests and that type of thing. I would hope that I wouldn't have to do that. But, you know, the challenge is that sometimes they are not very responsive. They're, you know, and that there's all kinds of various reasons why, and I don't want to speculate, but sometimes they're difficult to get a hold of. It's difficult to get answers from them. I will say that with the new administrator, Mike Townsend, again, I made a request to him a couple weeks ago, and he emailed me right back. And so I'm hoping that with that change in leadership, that kind of filters down through the rest of the organization, and that there is a little bit better responsiveness to some pretty basic questions. I'll do my best to gather that information for you, or to get a representative from the plan lined up. No promises, but I'll certainly make that effort.
Thank you. A question, and this is probably a future agenda item too. When do we select the next chair and vice chair of this commission?
I don't have an answer for that. I probably ought to. That's not a question that I've considered. I've been so preoccupied with audits and CAPRs and PSPRS and other things but I can certainly find out the answer, and I'll take a look at that.
I assume we do this every year.
Yeah, I think so. I would assume that as well. Maybe this is just something that I just didn't consider, just again because I was preoccupied and I just missed it. But you're right, Mr. Chair. I think that probably we probably need to go through the drill of selecting a new chair, a new vice chair, and provide the process for you all to make those selections and recommendations.
Most likely the February meeting, is that
absolutely
your assumption? Yeah,
we'll get that on the next agenda for sure. Already made the note.
Anybody else have any future agenda items? Well, if not, we've run this meeting almost 3 hours. So do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, and for audience that sat in on this. I think we've certainly got some pretty meaty things coming up, which will challenge all of us. And please, everybody, stay healthy.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Take care.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Good night.
Take care now.
Bye.
Thank you.